I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Indie Football Podcast. Such an interesting weekend of football that I barely know where to start. I'm Ed Mallion, of course, sports editor of The Independent, and I will be talking you through... Well, I think we're going to mainly do Arsenal, Man United and everything that came out of that this week. But also the World Cup draw, which was probably a million times more exciting than any football we've seen. So who's with me today? We've got our very own EU worker, Miguel Delaney. Miguel, yep. Say hello.
Hello.
How was your trip to Moscow?
Good, good. I enjoyed it, actually, I have to say.
First thoughts of Russia? Been there before now?
I think for maybe a few reasons I was slightly, not reticent about going, maybe slightly wary. And this has actually made
me... Would you say you were just profiling it, perhaps just you were just being racist?
No.
Okay, carry on.
You know, there's a sensitive political climate at the moment.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
But you said it was beautiful more than anything.
Yes, it is. The centre is amazing. It did actually amp up my excitement for the World Cup, I'd say. It was a great city centre.
I mean, I was looking at Google Street View of Saransk the other day. Hmm. As a bit of research, and that doesn't necessarily look as beautiful as St. Basil's Cathedral.
No, wouldn't
but it. No, I'm looking forward to seeing Moscow, and I'm sure you are, and I'm sure the man to my right, no, you stop talking, Jack Pitbrook is also looking forward to Russia. Jack?
Yeah, can't wait.
Judging by the pieces of paper next to you, which I won't spoil, you are very excited about Russia indeed. It will be your first World Cup.
Yes.
First World Cup. Excellent news for everyone. Also got Matt Murphy in the corner. No microphone for him. He's just...
For the best.
Yeah, it's for the best. He's just waving. Unfortunately, some slurs from him towards some of the podcast guests earlier on. We'll have to brush over those.
So, the Industrial Tribunal.
HR are very good here. we'll start with the Premier League. Arsenal-Manchester United. The only game worth talking about this weekend. Is that fair or is that too much?
No, City was. I would talk about that. Well, I suppose because you kind of have to talk about them both in connection, given the
well, indeed,
the
especially
derby.
With what Arsene Wenger said afterwards and what we get out of it. So, Arsenal Man United, Jack Pitbrook, you were there, you were present at the Emirates Stadium for one of the best Premier League games ever.
It was certainly the best game. It's the best game I've seen this season. I think it was the best game in the league so far this season. It's funny because I wrote a preview piece saying about how the game had lost its edge because the two teams had focused too much on the bottom line and everything, which, like most match previews I wrote, was completely disproved by the first 3 minutes of the match itself. Because it was really, really good. It wasn't the highest quality game you'll ever see, but because some of the defending was so bad. But in terms of having everything you would want a big game to have, like kind of back and forth, lots of chances, end to end... violence, a red card.
Goals.
Yeah, really good. Really, really good goals. The second goal was brilliant. Yeah, that was fantastic. So it was almost like an old school Manchester United Arsenal game, except for the fact they didn't really have the title riding on it.
And they didn't seem to dislike each other. I know there was that, the Pogba red card, but there wasn't any sort of lingering sense of dislike.
There was a little bit between Herrera and Sanchez at the end.
That was good. I like that.
But then they're both two... pretty snide players.
So spiky characters.
Shouldn't be too much of a surprise.
Modern players just... I don't want to use the word millennial here, especially given how much it's been used in relation to Jose Mourinho. But it does feel as if kind of modern players just feel kind of... They don't have that kind of macho aggression of the Keane Vieira days.
It's probably all those avocados and the iPhones they're buying. That's why they can't afford houses. Do we think, Jack... The Arsenal are, because basically, I mean, if anyone doesn't know the score, Man United won 3-1. Arsenal were the better team throughout, fair to say?
I'm not sure. So I got lots of Arsenal fans on Twitter telling me that. I think that from Arsenal dominated possession and chances for more of the game than United did. But when you gift away two goals as stupidly as Arsenal did in the first 10 minutes, like, that isn't luck.
Yeah.
That's really, that is catastrophically bad football. And that has to be factored into, like, the bigger question of who deserves to win.
You can't just say, ignore what we did really, really badly, right, and yeah, concentrate on the good.
Yeah. And even then, like, other things which might be interpreted as luck, like De Gea being brilliant, like that isn't luck. That's the fact that he's the best goalkeeper in the world. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Arsenal were dominant for long spells, but equally, I think they did deserve to lose. In a sense, it was a bit like an Arsenal season in microcosm, because we're always used to Arsenal being disastrously bad in August, September, October, playing themselves out of the title race, and only then in November, December, turning it on. After they've already thrown everything away. And this game was like that. Like,
and as well as that, enough in the game or the season so they can go, oh no, actually we are okay. Everything's going to be fine for the future.
Going down 2-0, like gifting away two goals in the first 10 minutes and then starting to play really well. I mean, yeah, you can tell yourself that for the majority of the game you played well, but because you played so badly at the very start of it, you still lost. And that's basically how an Arsenal season works.
And Arsenal's defence, which was supposed to be this new thing they'd fixed, the back three of Koscielny, Monreal and Mustafi, I think they played 5-1-5, conceded 0 or something like that together. Suddenly, completely dismantled in a matter of seconds.
Yeah, I remember on Wednesday night after the Huddersfield game, Arsene Wenger told us that he thought that the back three would make them newly secure against the counter-attack, and they wouldn't have to worry about that in the same way nowadays. And like that might have been true, but for the fact that the defenders made absolutely catastrophic errors for the goals. I mean, the first one came with Koscielny trying to play a square pass to Kolasinac, which got cut out by Valencia. The second came with Mustafi trying to play out from the back, getting nicked by Lingard, and then running out, and they got in behind. So even like what Wenger said might have been true in theory, but in practice, the individual errors were so bad that there was nothing they could do to stop it.
And, I mean, Manchester United, Miguel, come away with the 3 points. They're still not really in the title race.
Still a huge gap. They still absolutely have to win this game.
They have to beat Manchester City next weekend, which is something we should touch on, I suppose. They won't have Paul Pogba, who was sent off. We all agree that was a red card.
Yeah, I think it wasn't as bad as it looked.
Yeah, I agree.
But
with
it
that.
Was.
I'm not sure it was super intentional.
It's not like a malicious stamp, although it looked like a malicious stamp when you first see it. I think he was reaching for the ball, basically overreached, got it wrong. But
the second foot comes down on Bellerin,
and ultimately we all know, like, the even if it's not necessarily the laws, but we all know the context of these decisions and kind of what your referees are guided by. Mm-hmm. And when you come in like that, when you're kind of your foot is raised in any way, you're kind of. You're putting yourself
where it was on him as well, where it was on Bellerin, like it's, you know, the ball's not often there. It's just not, I don't think it's an area you can hit a player with the studs and get away with.
Certain Twitter trolls pointed to the unnatural position of Bellerin's
no, I did read that, but
it's a bit JFK, back to the left.
Yeah.
I think broadly, it's a shame that Pogba won't be playing in the Manchester Derby because it gives United the excuse. You know, what I wanted was two full-strength teams going into this game, and then we can really see who's the better side.
Yeah, I mean,
I've been really impressed by Lingard. So Lingard's had a really good week. Scored against Watford last Tuesday night. Scored twice against Arsenal. And
well,
I think he's the kind of
aligned players as well.
His kind of counter... he's not that good, but he's really good at counter-attacking because he's really quick and makes good runs. And he's the kind of player, if United play in a similar way against City, which I'm sure they will, then I imagine that Herrera will come in for Pogba and then Lingard can do that counter-attacking job.
He's actually the sort of player that does very well in the Mourinho team as well, because he'll follow orders and has his physical attributes that, you know, maximises those orders.
They gave him a big new deal as well, didn't they? I mean, he's going to be sticking around, you'd expect. Marcus Rojo was back as well, which I thought made a bit of a difference to their back line. But broadly speaking, Arsenal, they were good. But it's December. They're out the title race.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just the same old season for them. The only thing really, the thing that's most interesting around Arsenal for me is the wrangle that's going on with the ownership. And also the fact that they brought in Sven Mislintat, their new scouting guy, head of recruitment, and Raul Senlecki from Barcelona. Is this preparing for a Wenger departure next summer? You know, or are they going to try and linger it on for another year? Because if you do linger it on for another year, then what you've got is that situation where we know the contract's ticking down.
Yeah, exactly.
It's better if he leaves halfway through a two-year contract.
Yeah, it is interesting that way. And also, I mean, the big question, if he does stay an extra year, can their new hierarchy really do the work, or the ideal amount of work that they can do while you have such a powerful figure like Wenger there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in a sense, this... the appointments of Mislintat and Sanlehi is a victory for Gazidis in the kind of long running Wenger Gazidis tussle. Like, this is what Gazidis always wanted, was to have these kind of senior people reporting to him.
Wasn't it a slight Wenger victory in that the guy coming in from Barcelona is not going to have any control over the football side? Like, he is just a kind of a contracts and admin guy.
His law's moving on, isn't it, more?
So. Yeah, it's more of a Dick Law replacement.
Yeah. Dick Law, but
whereas if Overmars had come in, it would be more of a sporting guy.
But now that these guys are in place, it's going to, you wonder whether or not, I mean, if this means that ultimately Gazidis has got that victory over Wenger.
Hmm.
And if it, I mean, I don't know whether it will speed up Wenger's departure, but certainly it means that there's a structure in place. When he does go, they can go and get a kind of head coach rather than a sort of Wenger-type role.
It's another link between the clubs, actually, that touches on also the piece you did in the build-up, Jack, in terms of kind of their similar structures. But both of them are going to go through, could well be going through this kind of an admin change, because there's been talk that United will appoint a director of football and want a new club secretary.
Well, that was first rumoured when Jose was first brought on board by United.
And there's a bit of conflict in it, because I've both heard that Mourinho didn't want a director of football initially and was dead against it, but and that if he wants one now, it would take a massive change. But then I've also heard, to be fair, connected to that, that Mourinho has been, he hasn't noticed basically how much of United is concentrated on commercial rather than actual pure football, which is again something that you mentioned in that piece on Thursday.
Well, you'd rather have someone who knows about football doing the director of football role rather than Ed Woodward, who is kind of almost de facto doing it himself.
And even like, given the nature of Woodward's job, sure, that's too much to put on him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's an enormous company, isn't it? Manchester Derby, anything you want to say ahead of that?
The one thing I was thinking about this game is, you know, was this... So what carries the biggest weight from this United win? Is it the qualities that won them the game, or is it the kind of some of the errors and mistakes and issues that would, you know, give you cause for thought?
For me, it was, I would probably, if I were a Manchester United fan, I would probably be more optimistic about what I saw on Saturday, just because they showed that they can score goals away at a big six team.
Yes, yeah.
Because they are kind of... Those front players are sharp enough to pick up on defensive mistakes in the opposition. The issue is that, I mean, Arsenal did what Liverpool and Chelsea were smart enough to not do, which is to make stupid errors trying to play out from the back, which is really probably the only way that United were going to score.
That's true, actually, yeah.
And so if City watch that, they will realise that they have to be basically perfect playing out from the back Sunday, so they don't fall into the same traps as Arsenal did.
And Stones could be a big miss there, actually.
Yeah, I mean, God, if they play Mangala, then they're in serious trouble.
That's a slight leveler, I think, possibly, but the absence of Pogba is massive.
Yeah, well, because Pogba basically just makes... It means that no matter how defensive Mourinho wants to go with the rest of his team, the natural way that Pogba plays just brings everything up a level. Something does seem to have clicked them on the break recently. I mean, that's two games in a row, that's two really kind of ruthless attacking performances.
Seven goals at two difficult places to go.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
There's one of the goals, I saw a freeze frame from it, where there's basically about five Arsenal players clustered around Pogba.
Yeah.
You know, leaving everyone else free. And that's basically what he brings more than, you know, whoever's going to play in his place there is never going to bring the same sort of fear factor. And the thing with Pogba is, because, you know, one of the great things that he was doing at Juventus was he dribbled the ball through the midfield thirds more than any other player in Europe in terms of distance covered. And what he does is, by bringing the ball forward, he attracts defenders, which opens up holes, and then he's, you know, he's good enough to make the pass. So without that, there will be an issue, I think, against City with that. Any final thoughts ahead of the derby from you, Jack?
City aren't playing well. I mean, that seems like an obvious thing to say, but they were...
Them not playing well is still better than pretty much any team in the league.
Also, I think there has been because of the hammerings they doled out to so many teams over September and October, I think basically just more... Last three games, it's been so conspicuous just how deeply defensive...
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit similar to the issue Spain had in 2010, and between 2008 and 2010, where suddenly there was all this argument and debate about how boring Spain were. But I do think a large part of that was because everyone realized, they dominate so much of the ball, they're sort of, if we step out against these... We're done. So it just caused...
That was very evident from... I mean, I didn't see the Saints game, but I was at the Huddersfield game and watched the West Ham game on telly, and that was very evident from both of those, was how kind of deep, narrow, and how much those defences were set back, basically, rather than stepping up.
Yeah. Jose's going to park it, right?
And I think he's, for once, justified in
that. Yeah, why would not? Like, why there is, that is the problem with when Guardiola complains about this kind of thing, is there is no, like, it would be insane to do anything else than anything other than that. You'd have to be so, so good. Like, Spurs can do it, but I don't think anybody else can.
If you were Jose, would you consider not playing Lukaku and going with two faster forwards?
Yeah.
I'm not sure he'd do it, but
Lukaku gives him a little bit of an outlet in that way. Although he'd always be concerned about his touch, especially
his first touch.
This is the issue with Lukaku in games like that, especially if you expect City to dominate the ball. Lukaku will have even fewer touches, which will make him kind of even rustier throughout the game. It was something that was very evident in the games away to Liverpool and Chelsea.
Well, if they play that 3-4-1-2 again, they could. Where they've had Lukaku and Martial together up front, they could actually have Martial and Rashford, I guess, in theory.
I mean, I'd be interested to see something like that. I guess without Pogba there, it's probably less likely, but it would have been nice to see, you know, a speedy frontline Martial and Rashford.
Yeah.
Maybe Pogba in at that number 10 position, and they basically go Matic, Herrera, and then the wing back. So it's like a back seven. It's almost a back seven with two guys just sat in front of the defenders.
Yeah.
Apart from that, I think the Premier League was a fairly dull weekend. As you say, City got it done. I'm happy to move on to Friday, which is obviously even further back in time. But it was the World Cup draw, which is about as big an administrative function as it gets in football, and was excellent, just because, you know, the excitement of next summer's tournament really begins with knowing who the hell's going to be playing each other.
Well, it is. I mean, I think I tweeted it during the draw, but it is that thing of suddenly, when the names start coming through, it is impossible not to start getting excited, because the World Cup finally starts to take shape. It's kind of gets coloured in. Like, it's not just this kind of massive event. It's that game is then, this is then.
That felt like a reference to my colour-coded spreadsheet, which I've begun. from that, I mean, is there any point in me reading off the groups? I feel like people are going to know the groups. But what we're going to do, we're going to go through the World Cup, and we're going to tell you who's going to win everything, so you don't have to watch it next summer. So we'll begin with Group A.
Well, you can read our quality content.
We'll obviously read the high quality content. Russia versus Saudi Arabia is the opening game, which is going to be a belter.
Won't be going to that, so.
Miguel has requested that one. I'll probably be there as well. Egypt, Uruguay, the other two teams. So who do you... This is Jack Pitbrook has gone through all the hard work of predicting the future for us. So what do we see from Group A, Jack?
I guess Uruguay will win it, and then second place will be Russia.
Oh yeah,
they're going to get all the refereeing decisions right. South Korea all over again.
And there's always that little bit of oomph about a host nation as well.
Yeah, the Russian sportsmen obviously have a lot of.
Maybe it is possible though that the pressure that's going to be on that team, they could completely bottle it.
I did read something interesting. I think was it the Wall Street Journal? It might have been in the Guardian. Actually, it might have been Martha Kellner's piece, saying that Putin basically is kind of. Doesn't care about this as much anymore.
No, he doesn't. Yeah,
I've seen Olympics was his baby.
I've seen that in a few places actually. Although I've also, I think it was first in the Financial Times, in which Simon Cooper wrote that he didn't want. Although I've seen a few pieces since that he the alpha male in Putin. In fact, I wrote my own piece as well that he sees this as an opportunity for kind of, you know, young Russians. Let's create a more physically adept nation and use events like the World Cup to do that.
And this is fundamentally, you know, all the eyes of the world will still be on Russia. So that's inescapable. So Putin will care about this, regardless perhaps of the football team's success. The World Cup itself has to be a success. But you've got Uruguay and Russia coming through from that group in first and second.
Yeah, you guys are allowed to vote too. It's not just me.
I mean, I'm okay with that. I think Egypt could be decent.
What if Russia throw everyone forward against Egypt, desperately chasing a result, and then just get shredded by Salah on the break?
Yeah, that's very part. Yeah.
No, well, it's going to be fun to watch, because Egypt presumably will play largely on the back foot against Uruguay, but have some decent pace on the attack.
That actually could be, it's a game that because of the players involved, you think, well, that'll be good, Salah, maybe Suarez, and Morgan as Barca form, Cavani and that. And yet they're basically, they could be both counter-attacking team. It could be a nil all there.
It's their opening group game, Egypt-Uruguay, in Yekaterinburg. That's the furthest east city in Russia that's hosting the World Cup, and it's the lunchtime kickoff. So it does have all the hallmarks of an absolutely dreadful match. but it's going to be crucial for both of those teams because, you know, I don't think it's a given that Uruguay go through. They weren't as good as usual in qualifying, but they do have.
Suarez just looks so.
Suarez has been dreadful this season, and
do you think he's playing within himself for the sake of the world, his last World Cup at the top,
especially after what happened last time? But no, I think he just looks a bit. He looks a bit dumpy at the moment.
Yeah.
It looks a bit big. But he's really struggled because of Neymar's absence. I mean, with Uruguay, that's a team that they play for each other in a huge way, and there's a lot of patriotic motivation there. So they're always a danger. But that is a weak group. Apparently, it's one of the weakest. I think it's the weakest group ever at a World Cup.
The ranking.
So well done on Russia for getting so lucky with that group. Group B, Morocco, Iran, Portugal, Spain. Love this group. I think a lot of interesting little storylines link these teams. What have you got, Jack?
Yep, Portugal, Spain. Spain to win it for me. I'm not Jack. I'm Miguel.
No, I was looking at
so
Jack.
We're going for Spain. Spain first, Portugal second.
Yeah. I like one. Actually, one of the positives of the draw was the fact it meant that Portugal, Spain is the first game of the group because then they're not just playing out.
Yeah.
And no matter how important getting first place in a group is, it's still just not the same competitiveness as a game if it's actually fighting to get through. So
I think Spain. I think Spain are better than Portugal.
I think
Spain are the favourites.
Lopetegui has kind of got them doing the right things. Yeah. They got too much strength.
So much quality. I think there's several levels ahead of Portugal.
Morocco, a bit of a wild card with what they're going to bring to it, but they've got some good talent.
Yeah.
So. It's just such a difficult group for those two teams, well, Morocco and Iran.
You see, the whole thing is, if someone wins that opening game between Portugal and Spain, then there's an awkward. Because I was at the last World Cup, the World Cup, the last game between Iran and Argentina, the one that Messi only won like with a screamer in the 93rd minute. And Queiroz was in charge of Iran then as well. And he's a manager very, very good at making it difficult for these teams for in terms of how you open them up. So that you don't want to go into that Iran game needing a win.
And if, you know, if Spain beat Portugal and Morocco beat Iran on the opening day, then Morocco go into these games, you know, like if they can nick a draw off Portugal, then they're in the driving seat. But I think we both agree that Spain and Portugal will go through from that one. Group C, France, Australia, Peru, Denmark. What a brilliant clash of nations that is. Have you gone for France first, Denmark second?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Peru won't have Guerrero, will they? Is that?
Yeah. It looks like they won't have Guerrero, but they've still got Farfan. Yeah, I mean, Guerrero's just a hard-working guy. He's not necessarily that good a striker, I think. He's hard-working. They've got Advincute. They've got a couple of, like, cute wingers. Okay. They've got a couple of decent guys. Carrillo, was at Sporting
Watford.
Lisbon. Watford now, is he? Is he playing much at Watford?
Not really.
I don't remember seeing him much.
Good kit too. It's obligatory when Peru were mentioned.
And Australia don't look that good. But, you know, they could surprise people, I guess.
I think from what I saw in the playoff, I think it's certainly a more limited Australia team than 2010.
Another great group, Group D, Argentina, Iceland, Croatia, Nigeria.
That is the most fascinating group, I think.
I love Croatia. I think they're great.
I think Argentina will by then be a proper force.
I agree. I think once Sampaoli's had a bit of time with them, he's going to round them into tournament shape. He's got a great record at tournaments. Yeah. Sampaoli, as a coach, I think he still is one of the best coaches who's going to be at the World Cup. Croatia second, though, we're going with. That midfield is just so loaded.
Yeah, I mean, for as long as they've still got Modric, they're going to be...
I think they can be
Hasn't there been a bit of a concern at Madrid this season over Modric's ability to play two consecutive games?
Yeah, I heard that they think he's kind of come down from physical peak. But, like, it's the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got Brozovic as well. You've got Rakitic.
Perisic.
You've got Perisic. Up front, they've got options. You've got Bedelia, who's quite a decent playmaker. The back line's probably the issue you'd look at. You know, Lovren.
Yeah,
if he's back in the mix. But no, I think Nigeria have got a load of talent as well, and Iceland, we've seen what they can do. It's one of those groups that a couple of the draws would really throw things wide open.
And
there's no team there that's flawless.
We have me down for a few games in that group, don't we? I believe
you're doing Croatia, Nigeria and Kaliningrad, as far as I can see. No, you're not. Group E, Costa Rica, Serbia, Switzerland, and Brazil. What do you think?
Brazil to walk it, but to be, I think it'll be quite a competitive group after that.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I saw Switzerland against Northern Ireland in the second leg of their playoff, and they would have been all right except for Haris Seferovic, who is nowhere near good enough to play up front for them. So
He was David Moyes' Real Sociedad. He was their lone striker, I remember correctly.
So I don't know if they're going to... If they play Breel in Bolo, they could be quite dangerous, but otherwise I think they're going to be in trouble. Serbia have got lots of really good players, but that's kind of always been the case, and they're always everyone's dark horse.
I was about to say, they get tipped as dark horses every
time.
And
it never works out like that.
It is an odd situation as well. It looked like they finally clicked in qualifiers, and then they've gone and sacked the manager.
Yeah.
So, like...
Yeah, a lot of these teams seem to always just sabotage themselves.
So I'd love to say Serbia, but I'd say probably Switzerland.
The Swiss have a good tournament record in that way.
They're quite solid. They've got lots of solid, reliable players, and that group's been together for ages.
Writing off Costa Rica after what they did last time.
Yeah, classic Eurocentric indie.
As Serbia mentioned on Thursday, everyone was writing off. So he was there, I think he was there for scouting for the FA for the World Cup in Brazil. You know, everyone was writing off Costa Rica, and then at the end of the second game, watching them all celebrate.
Yeah, I mean, Costa Rica, good side.
Also, again, I think I wrote in my preview of the draw, international football is fairly middling.
Yeah.
And there's not many great managers. There's a lot of ordinary teams in this World Cup, and anyone with a little bit of organisation and innovation, and particularly maybe one or two very good players, can go all the way to the semis.
Which takes us to Group F. Germany, Mexico, Sweden, South Korea. I would put Germany and Mexico through.
Yeah, I'd go for that.
Ahead of the Swedes, right?
Mexico got better players than Sweden.
Yeah.
Mexico are one of those terminally underrated.
Well, I don't think they're underrated. I think they're underachieving.
Yeah, like they're underachieving.
A football-mad country of 150 million people. They've only reached two quarterfinals. Both when they hosted it.
It's amazing, actually.
They've got like one of the richest and most lucrative leagues in the world.
Yeah.
But people don't give... I mean, that's part of it. People don't give them any respect, though. I've seen a lot of people who just assume Germany and Sweden would go through from this group.
This seems to be more together in Mexico, actually.
Yeah, certainly. There's less infighting than there previously was, and there are more Mexican players now playing in good clubs at good leagues. They probably still lack a little bit in terms of game-breaking talent that's going to take them beyond, like, say, the quarterfinals. But I don't think it's a bad team. I think they'll go through ahead of Sweden, but Mexico Sweden is likely to be the killer in that group. Germany should win all their games without any problems,
yeah,
right?
I think so. Maybe 7 points, maybe the one.
We like Germany there. Group G is
singing for England.
Yes, I mean, try and be neutral here, Miguel, because I know you're a big England fan.
I like Southgate. I wish him very well.
Why do you like Gareth Southgate?
I think he's a good, honest guy. Has interest in the game. Knows what he wants. No time for a lot of the bullshit around the English national team, and there is an awful lot of it.
Correct.
I'm allowed to say bullshit.
Of course you were.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I really like his attitude to the captaincy. Whether he's a good enough manager, it's hard to say, because we haven't seen too much yet from this England, and there's not too much evidence from his Middlesbrough time.
There is. It's just not good.
Yeah, the relegation.
That's the big question really with Southgate is that I think he says all the right things.
Yeah.
Everyone really likes him. He's got a lot of credit.
He's got to get a lot of integrity.
The most important, he's got a lot of integrity and he's very smart. But the big question, the big unanswered question is the most important one, which is that we don't know if he's a good manager or not.
Yeah.
There's kind of not really enough evidence yet.
And then what we're going to do is we're going to base his entire career off potentially a 7-game stretch.
Yeah, that's
in
true.
Russia.
Well, potentially a 1-game stretch. Yeah. Like although
Glenn did say today that no matter what happens in Russia, he will stay on the job because he has a longer term project. And to be fair, I think that's
Martin Glenn, chief executive of the FA.
I think that's quite a clever attitude in the sense that you can't take this is a very, very young team with very little tournament experience, very little experience of winning trophies. So.
And also, just say it anyway. The FA can go back on it and sack him later.
Well, yeah.
You know, that's almost inevitably what would happen if they bombed out at the group stage.
But they
played Tunisia in the opener. And then they played Panama. And then they played Belgium in Kaliningrad, the group finale. What do we think about this group? I mean, the assumption is that Belgium and England should go through.
Yeah. But Belgium are actually in a slightly similar situation to England now. Ever since Spain broke their historic drought with the greatest run of trophies that the international game has ever seen, the kind of the tag of the big nation or talented nation that bottles it has moved to England, and almost more so in the last few years to Belgium. And while I think Martinez has done some good things at the team, there are evidently issues, as we've seen like with some of the comments from De Bruyne. So I think that's a bit of an... I wouldn't necessarily automatically say it's Belgium top of the group, even though they have more quality players in their prime than England. But one thing actually about this group and Spain's group, it's almost as if the draw has fashioned it. Like Spain and England weren't seeds, but they almost may as well be seeds with the way the draws were done, right down to the fact that if they get through, it's against a more forgiving last 16 opponent, whether they finish first or second.
Mm-hmm. If you had to pick Belgium, England, who's going to finish top?
Belgium probably have more goals than them. So if they're bottom 7 points, I think Belgium will have a better goal difference.
Yeah, I'm going for Belgium to win the group ahead of England for me.
I just look forward to seeing them without Mark Wilmots, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true. A
dreadful, dreadful coach. I did 2 Belgium games at each of the last 2 tournaments, and he just ruined an incredibly talented squad, unfortunately. You know, Roberto Martinez is a guy who's had his flaws for sure, especially in organising
a defence. He's got good qualities as well.
I think he's very personable, and if the players like him and he's a good coach, then the sky's the limit for that team. You know, that could be a semi-finalist at least, I think, if it goes right. If it goes wrong, who knows? Panama is going to be one of those mysteries, isn't it? I think lots of people don't know much about them, but they did knock out the US. They are good in Panama, at least, whether that translates to Sochi, we'll see. Tunisia, again, a bit of an unknown quantity. Almost certain that England will play a pre-tournament friendly against someone like Algeria, assuming that they play the same style of football.
That's going to be the classic pre-World Cup tournament. Again, like you say, against a team bordering a country we're drawn against.
Yeah. Right? They're the same.
We will also play Guatemala or Honduras by the same logic.
Well,
Honduras after they beat the fuck out of our player last time.
It'll be at Wembley on about the 2nd of June. We'll all go there incredibly excited. And then it'll be 0-0.
Yeah.
Eric Dier will bundle in a late equaliser 1-1. And it's that national moment of realisation, like, Christ, we're actually not going to win this, are we?
So in... at the draw on Friday in the mix zone afterwards, we got the Panama manager who managed Colombia when they lost to England in 98, the 2-0.
Hernan Dario Gomez.
He was like, he was funny. He was exactly saying, we're just talking about, so what do you think of the style? And he said almost exactly that. Well, you know, England, they're quite similar to Wales in the style, who we played recently. And then, you know, he did it. We've played Iran recently as well, so they're quite similar to Tunisia. Okay.
So Belgium and England from that group will give Belgium the win, so that we can't be accused of building them up to knock them down, because that will inevitably happen. In the next group,
I'm actually sick of that getting said as well. Building up. Like,
yeah, no, I'm probably going to do a column on it at some point. It is absolute bollocks. Poland, Senegal, Colombia, and Japan in what can only be described as a weird group. Poland, what do we think?
I mean, Lewandowski.
They gamed the world ranking system to get a top seed, and it's completely worked out for them.
Yeah.
But I'm still not convinced they're even going to get out of this group, because I think Colombia are the winners, right?
Yeah, Colombia should win it.
Good side, Poland, though. and they've got
they're quite solid. I mean, if
they're uninspiring,
if you can defend in two banks of four and you have a world class number nine, I mean, as Miguel said, like World Cup football isn't actually that hard. Like that's a pretty good recipe for winning.
Yeah.
At the Euros, their tactic seemed to be to win on penalties. That was kind of what they were going for, and they're probably. You know, okay, maybe they squeak through this group and then go out round of 16 penalties after 0-0 after 120 minutes.
Then they go out on pens to Portugal.
Yeah, I was there.
Who did they beat in the last 16, actually?
Switzerland.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was it? It was Poland, Portugal. And yeah, Poland, Switzerland was the Shaqiri game. The Shaqiri
bicycle
kick, yes. God, I can't remember all that stuff. But
actually, I was watching that in the press room of Lons because I went to what
arguing
was
arguing about Brexit with another journalist that we know.
That's not going further than that one. But yeah, that was also the day of one of the worst matches I've ever been to. Croatia, Portugal.
Yeah, that
dreadful.
Was terrible. That was really, really bad.
And also irrelevant. Poland, Senegal, Colombia, Japan in Group H. So Japan. I've not watched a lot of Japan recently. Can someone help me on Japan?
They've got some pretty good players.
Anything could happen. It's just a wide open group. Like Senegal, I have seen a little bit of. They're a good side. They've obviously got very good players that are playing in Europe.
Who obviously are their very good players?
Sadio Mane.
Oh, right.
Actually,
he's really good. He's genuinely one of the best players in the Premier League.
Yeah, yeah. Japanese, now this is a wider debate rather than to do with a specific team, but I remember talking to someone recently about coaching in countries like Japan and the USA, super wealthy countries that have got into football more recently. And one of the problems they've had is that means that they don't create, or their kind of culture doesn't create, or doesn't know how to make the best out of naturally instinctive players, that they just coach generations of these technically very adept players, but without anything extra to their game.
Big problem in America, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, so I'd actually be interested in exploring this before the World Cup in some notional piece.
I think Colombia win this. Let me have it.
Yeah, Colombia, and then
you're going to put Poland through, but I want to put Senegal through because I'm feeling like a wild card.
Okay. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Mane.
Sorry, Paul.
Okay. Last 16.
So the last 16, then that would put us with Jack.
So the first game in Sochi is Uruguay against Portugal.
Portugal.
Yeah, Portugal.
Just yeah, you'd have to say that Ronaldo factor.
I think Uruguay aren't as good as they've been in years past. Yeah. You know, they had their time was that last World Cup. They were kind of all in their peak a bit.
And Portugal do have, I mean, even beneath Ronaldo, they do have a good generation of youngsters coming through.
Actually, 2011 was really their peak because Suarez was...
When they had Forlan as well.
Yeah.
Suarez, Cavani, right, Forlan, Lodeiro.
And they won the Copa that year, didn't they?
Yeah. Then in Kazan, we've got France against Croatia.
Game.
Presumably that should be a pretty easy...
It's a really good game, but France win.
France will win, yeah.
Oh, they could have a tournament meltdown. You know,
Deschamps again.
France has got so the talent they have in their front line is just ludicrous.
Yeah.
A player who once played under Deschamps told me about they were on a plane back from a game once, and they were flying through a storm, and it was quite turbulent. And they were kind of worried. They were flying through the clouds, and there's a lightning bolt went off, and it kind of hits the plane. Obviously, it doesn't. You know, these things don't down a plane, but it's pretty scary because all the lights go off and come back on, whatever. And one of the other players turned to him and said, there's no way we'll crash. Deschamps on board. And basically the whole thing about Deschamps is they all thought he was the luckiest manager alive, basically. Yeah. He constantly gets put in these great positions, constantly keeps getting these great jobs. Like he was the water carrier in a very good French team that won the World Cup. And he kind of became the face of it. And he's this national figure in France where he's actually, as a coach, the players didn't seem to rate him. But I also think they could come unstuck. Because they've got a great, great, great squad of players, but I just don't think they're that well coached.
Yeah.
But I think they'll still beat Croatia in this nominal last 16 game in Kazan. Next up, on the 1st of July, at the Luzhniki, it's quite a good one, Spain against Russia. Has to be Spain.
Spicy. Yeah.
Bottom half of the draw. That's a 4-0, by the way.
Then
yeah, I'd agree.
Out in Nizhny Novgorod, Argentina-Denmark.
Argentina.
Yeah.
Comfortable Argentina win, you'd have to say.
Well, Denmark didn't look that great, did they, in the playoffs? You saw them?
No, I mean...
Oh, sorry, is it painful?
Not at all, really.
Okay.
Could be
Ireland playing Argentina in that spot.
They probably wouldn't have been second seed, though. But even in that game, you kind of... the context is essentially Martin O'Neill giving Christian Eriksen the freedom of the pitch. Mm. So that kind of skews everything. They were pretty bad in the first leg.
And Argentina would just kick him up in the air anyway.
And then on the 2nd of July in Samara, we've got Brazil against Mexico, which I think is a game we've had in the last two World Cups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brazil smashed that. I think they're the best team at the World Cup. So.
But it was 2014, nil-all draw. 2010, did they play in 2010? I don't think they did.
No, that was Argentina-Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't it? Not Brazil-Mexico.
Brazil knocked out Chile in the second round.
Mexico-Holland at the 2014,
was it? Yeah, yeah. That was a controversial game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then with the water break.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was a great game. And then in Rostov, we've got Belgium-Senegal.
What a great game that is. 3-2 Belgium.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then the final day of the last 16 round. It's a good one in St. Petersburg, Germany-Switzerland.
Ooh, spicy.
Has to be Germany.
Yeah. 3-0. Yeah.
Switzerland will never... I can't see Switzerland beating anyone better than them.
Yeah, yeah,
they've got
yeah.
no kind of special... They've got nothing interesting yeah. or exciting about them. And then, finally... In Moscow at the Okriti, Colombia, England.
Colombia.
I have to say England.
Oh. Deciding vote. Obviously, I'm going to have to go with England here because Gareth Southgate's such a nice bloke, according to Miguel. And that's enough to win World Cup knockout games.
Excellent.
By the way, I also think he's a nice bloke.
Okay. Well, this sets up with...
Would you call him a Palace legend?
He's got a soft spot for Palace, and I've seen him a few times there in the director's box, and he's kind of obviously knows the people at the club still, and he's not a legend per se, but he played for a few years for the club and was very good for the club.
So got stamped on by Roy Keane.
One of those situations. I mean, Roy Keane probably less of a good bloke than Gareth Southgate, we can say. Back to Nizhny Novgorod.
Excellent. So this takes us through to the quarterfinals. First up in Nizhny on the 6th of July, we have Portugal against France.
France.
You have to give it to France. Yeah. As unconvincing as they might
just
be.
Just mugged off Deschamps for 5 minutes.
They've just got, well, they'll get revenge
they've
for...
They've got better players.
They'll get revenge for 2016 as well.
Of course, yeah, yeah. That is the narrative.
How could we forget that tournament?
How could we forget that final? Then out all the way out in Kazan, we have Brazil-Belgium. Has to be Brazil.
Brazil, yeah.
Brazil-Belgium was the game that would have taken place in 2002 had England beaten Brazil.
No, wait, it was the game.
Was it not?
2002, yeah, Brazil.
Oh, no, sorry, other way around. Brazil played Belgium for the right to play England in that quarterfinal. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so, right.
Rivaldo got two.
So Belgium are seeking revenge for 0-2. That's an underrated narrative.
And then the bottom half of this draw is incredible. In Sochi, Spain-Argentina.
Oh, get around me.
That is classic.
Yeah, Miguel unfortunately can't make that game.
In the baking heat of Sochi.
I think I'll be at that one.
No, you're busy that day. but yeah, I'll be in Sochi for Spain Argentina where
you should rack every man. There'll be tennis or some rubbish on that day.
There is that is I think that's the middle weekend of Wimbledon.
you love that.
Cricket, you love that. More racial slurs. Sochi,
you do though.
Spain,
literally love cricket.
It's a good sport.
I think it has to be. I think yeah, I give 2-1. It to Spain.
Yeah,
2-1 Spain.
Yeah, yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah,
just because this is a great Spain team.
And then finally, in Samara, Germany, England. I just can't see England winning.
It's Germany on penalties, no. Isn't it? Always.
Germany just.
I think that England's ultimate problem is that even if. I think England have two problems. One is the attack and one's the defence.
Yeah, no. Two significant problems.
Like, firstly, England have really good attacking players, but I don't know if they're going to play well together, which isn't a given. And that's kind of what Southgate has to teach them to do between now and June. And the second is that in defence, we don't really even have good defenders. Like, I think...
Yeah, it's kind of seven out of ten defence.
I've never been convinced. The England defence hasn't been convincing for years at tournaments. Even under a more defensive coach than Hodgson, it wasn't. There's a big question mark over the goalkeeping. And I just think Germany will be good enough to pick their way through and score goals.
Yeah, got a bad feeling. Toni Kroos and Mesut Ozil might outclass Jake Livermore.
It's Alvida Zane England. And that takes us through to the semi-finals. First up in St. Petersburg, we have... 1998 final reprised, France against Brazil.
Spicy, Brazil win it.
Yeah, Brazil to win.
Yeah, a huge game.
2-0, I reckon. One early, like 16th minute, and then on the counter, 88th minute. Paul Pogba, of course, falls to the ground crying.
I'm actually getting excited thinking of it.
Brazil actually have more, probably the only other team apart who have like as good forward options as France.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have
great coach
Jesus,
Neymar, Jesus, Firmino, Coutinho.
Yeah, and then beyond that, a structure that works for the team.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing that is, Brazil always, they always include domestic-based players who like basically have no right to be there.
Yeah.
But like they've got so many attacking options. You think that they might be able to leave like Fred at home
Yeah. It is actually amazing though that they, well, not amazing, but it's, I suppose it's quite telling that, because I think it's still commonly accepted that there's a huge dysfunction in Brazil's whole football infrastructure. But I suppose, but because it's a massive country, by sheer weight of numbers, they just still create these.
Yeah, and there's, you know,
and
ones
they finally
got
the coach right.
There's still good players that end up in China, like Renato Augusto. And
in fact, actually,
Paulinho,
because they probably haven't had the right manager since 2002, really. Or
Tite is a genuinely brilliant coach. Yeah. I mean, like, he's just very, very good. What he did with Corinthians was excellent, and to have a really quality cast of players with this coach just works. You know, the last guys have been chosen for political reasons. This guy's been chosen because he's the best coach available. That's all you could ask for.
And then we're back at the Luzhniki for Spain-Germany.
Another belt.
Spain.
The big one.
I really hope it turns out like this, the final four.
Yeah,
inevitably it won't. But
Or Messi in there.
If Russia somehow bink the final four, I'm never watching football again.
I'd probably go for Spain over Germany.
Yeah.
I've never been massively convinced by Germany.
Neither have I. This is just something. Even when they won it in 2014, they was kind of, other than the Brazil game, they were never really kind of, you never got the sense that they were more than the sum of their amazing talents.
I think Morata, if he's going to be the guy, I mean,
will Costa be ready for Spain?
It's an interesting one. I am not sure. I'm not convinced. I mean, at the moment, it's very difficult for Lopetegui to make any decisions on that, but they have had a problem with number nine for the last 3-4 years.
And Costa wasn't fit in 2014.
Yeah, Paco Alcácer looked like he might be the guy, and then but it doesn't play for Barca. They took Aritz Aderiz, didn't they, to the Euros?
Yeah.
He didn't really do much. So I'm not sure about the number nine situation, but I think Morata's such a good link guy that I'd play him, and you hope that
he's gone back to David Villa, haven't they?
Villa was in the squad, yeah, he was in the squad.
The most important player in that Spanish team, in the great Spanish team, for me.
Perhaps not in 2018, but we'll see. But I think, yeah, we'll give that Spain. So the final is Spain versus Brazil.
So that gets us Spain versus Brazil at the Luzhniki on the 15th of July. Who are you going for?
I want to say Spain, but I feel like I'm probably going to go Brazil.
I think Brazil win 2-1 in extra time, and the goal scorer will be Gabriel Jesus in extra time.
Well, there we are. Put the mortgage on it.
What have you gone for? Is that 3-3?
Voted yet. I'm going to go for... I'd probably vote for Spain.
And then I'm kind of like 51-49.
I think Spain will probably have more... By that stage of the tournament, I'd say Spain will have more options on the bench. If you look at like the midfielders who aren't going to start for them, the strikers who aren't going to start for them, the winning experience of having won 3 tournaments in living memory, they've probably got the best keeper, the best 2 centre backs. I think that for longevity over the tournament and for variety of options, I would go for Spain over Brazil.
I'm changing my vote.
Flip-flop.
If you bet a lot of money on Brazil off the back of Ed's prediction 1 minute ago, then you're in trouble.
Two teams,
that is now no longer official independent policy.
Two teams that departed Brazil utterly scarred at the last World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
We were both at Spain-Chile, weren't we?
Yes. Spain just looked so tired. I wouldn't say Spain were scarred, but it was just kind of the end of that regime.
It was the end. And in fact, that was, I think it was the Marca front page, wasn't it? Iniesta walking off with just a black background. The end.
Good.
In English. And I think they do look like the two best. I'm really into Brazil. Probably way too into this Brazil team. But I think in a time of where there's a lot of question marks over these coaches, like Lopetegui still hasn't, at a senior level, achieved anything. Didier Deschamps, I told you, I don't necessarily think he's the man. Joachim Löw has obviously done quite well, but you know, he's a guy that has critics certainly in Germany, and this looks like it's going to be the last tournament of his cycle, as it were. Gareth Southgate, lovely man, Miguel says, so he's obviously going to win it, and you've got Roberto Martinez in charge of one of the best squads. So it is one of those things again where the coaching could be huge, but thank you for predicting the future with us today, guys. We've probably gone off a little too long, judging by the faces Matt is making at me. By the time you listen to this podcast, we've probably come a valiant second in the Football Supporters Federation Podcast Awards tonight. But no doubt, if you voted for us already, then you'll be cheering us on, and we will do you proud in terms of conduct and behaviour, if not winning the award itself.
By slagging off those who win it.
Yes, we'll relentlessly slag them off to their face and in private. So, Miguel, thank you for coming today. Thank you for your Manchester United Arsenal analysis. Thank you for your future predictions and your clairvoyance. Thank you, Jack Brook, for writing it all down.
Thank you.
If you could, maybe, I don't know, that would be good social content if you could tweet that when you tweet out the podcast later on, which you will. And thank you to Matt Murphy. Thank you to iTunes. Thank you to Acast. Thank you to Northcliffe House, in which we are resided. Thank you to London Underground for getting Miguel here in one piece.
And I didn't go to the Underground today. I got the Overground to West Brompton and then walked from there.
Literally nobody cares. Thank you for joining us. This is the Indie Football Podcast. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.